All right, I'll try and do the roll call over this. So, Julie Moeller?
Yes.
Eric Simon?
Here.
Beth Chang?
Here.
Andy Basney?
Here.
Susan Charette?
Here.
And Lisa and Shannon aren't on right now. So if there was going to be any public comment, it was supposed to be emailed to me, and no one has emailed me, so we don't have public comment. So I guess we'll go ahead with the commissioner comments.
Yeah, there's a lot to say, right? I mean, who would have known after our last meeting? So,
by the way, I'll jot down the minutes during this.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
Sure.
So, I'll just start out and just say, you know, I'm glad everyone's doing all right. I kind of everything just stopped, and Earth Day kind of came and went, and I think we were all regrouping, and we're trying to let the village do what they needed to do, which they have been doing a great job. Thank you, John. And so we just, but then little things keep creeping up, so we thought we would have a meeting. And obviously, I haven't attended any meetings. I've had conversations just with people offline on things that are going on. So everything's kind of halted, but things are good. I do have some news that I have sold my house and have been packing up. So I have had lots to do during this being at home. And I close on June 8th. So I will be leaving River Forest. I'm moving downtown. And so I'll really be working on just kind of wrapping things up and finishing the work that I started here. Lisa is going to take over as chair. And we'll be then looking for another commissioner to fill the spot. So the vacancy, if anyone knows anyone who's interested, you know, can submit their name to me or Kathy. And, yeah, so, but, you know, it's kind of a weird time to exit, you know, but it'll continue, right? So.
Well, that's a big news, Julie. I guess I'm glad for you that you were able to sell your house, since I knew you wanted to do that, but we're certainly going to be very sad to not have you in River Forest. And, you know, I'm sure I speak for everybody that there are really no words to probably thank you for everything you've done for River Forest and sustainability and all of that. And I know you'll stay in touch. So,
yeah.
We'll miss you.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's a little weird, you know, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, you'll still hear from me, I'm sure. So.
Yes. And we'll still bug you. So don't worry.
Yeah. So, do you have anything you wanted else to say, Beth? Or?
You know, obviously I haven't been to any meetings either. I guess this is more just a comment that I tried to do some of the One Earth mini film festival mm-hmm. things. I wasn't able to do really as much as I wanted to, but I thought it was a heroic effort. And I'm glad that some of the things are still available on recording. Like, I haven't watched Monty and Rose yet, but I did watch the Wasted one on food waste. I thought it was, you know, what struck me about that, and that is something I think needs to be in all of our messaging about environmental things right now, is that it's it was simultaneously painted, you know, very clear picture of the problem, but somehow left me still feeling hopeful, because they shared a lot of, you know, creative solutions that are being tried out. So,
yeah, I thought the One Earth Film Festival did a nice job, just kind of scrambled to get that together. And I thought they did a good job. So, Andy, how are you doing?
We're doing good. Family's good. I don't have any meeting updates per se. I think a lot more activity is going to be starting over the next month or so. you know, both business and village related, I'm sure. So that, but I don't have anything else specific to update the commission on.
And Eric, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well, thank you. You know, we have not murdered kids yet in the house, so that's strong plus. No, on the commission front, yeah, nothing to report, just like everybody else. You know, we've all been thinking about it and, you know, reading articles on environmental issues on a daily basis and all that, but, you know, obviously the lack of meetings is...
Yeah,
made it challenging.
Yeah, lots of webinars out there. I did a webinar on the Great Lakes through the Environmental Law and Policy Center. I listened to the National Recycling Association update on recycling, but lots of information. But yeah, not, you know, just yeah.
There's amazing content right now.
There is. It's almost it's a little overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. Yeah.
Yeah, but good stuff. And and Susan, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I attended the Planet Greens, I guess it wasn't Zoom. It was on the phone. It was just a call-in, which was even tougher. So there's just a couple of issues that came up. One is how to refuse plastic bags. Has everybody figured that one out at the grocery store? No, you haven't?
Nope. Take my own in bag or?
Well, so many stores won't let you take your bags into the store. That's the issue. So,
I guess if I bag, I haven't had a problem if I bag it myself, they let me take it.
It depends where you are. Some places that's not okay. So what they do allow you to do is you can take your food and put it into your grocery cart and roll it out and then you put in your bags in your car for the places that are a little stricter on that, if that's important to anybody. Mark Berger, the consultant for
Elevate.
Is he for Elevate or for Seven Generations?
Well, I mean, he works for Elevate. He's a consultant, yeah.
Okay. So basically he said legislatively everything's on pause. And what they're trying, I guess the angle they're trying to pursue is the creation of jobs, is how the Clean Jobs Act will create jobs. So maybe there's an opportunity with that, with the changes in the oil industry. Then there was a bunch of talk about Earth Day. And I sent that out because it was a timely nature. So I've already sent that out. Beth already mentioned the One Earth Film Festival. And I would just add to that, if you are interested in films that flew by, sometimes those are on Netflix. I've watched many of those on Netflix. So even if you missed the opportunity. Somebody spoke about sustainability curriculum. I guess they spoke to Allison Hawley, but not too much developments there. And yeah, that's my thing. And then the only last thing I would say was, I was just a little disappointed that Kathy Aducci and her Earth Day didn't include that we had become a municipal arboretum this year. She mentioned that we were Tree City, but that was sort of old news, so.
Yeah, you know what, and I had sent her the information and I probably had overlooked that.
That's it.
So thanks for catching that. We can,
put a little Facebook thing out on Arboretum Day, but you know, limited number of people saw that.
Earth Day was tough. I know that the group in Oak Park was trying to, you know, get people to rally, and it just, like you said, Eric, there's so much information out there and everyone's shooting out videos and emails, and it's, you know, it's a lot. So I think that so one thing that prompted this meeting, going on to urban chickens, Kathy Aducci, President Aducci, had gotten an email from a River Forest resident who, in light of everything, you know, just they've been trying to make more food at home. They've been more conscious about going to the store. And she asked if, you know, they could raise their own chickens and why the, if the ordinance could be changed. And so Kathy had contacted me and asked the Sustainability Commission to look into this and provide a recommendation. As all of you know from working on the bee ordinance, that this is it can be time consuming, and you know, but Kathy has asked us to make a recommendation to the village board, so that she can answer this resident. So it's you know, I don't want to just be off the cuff and just say, yeah, we'll look into it. Yeah, sounds great. But because it's, as you know, we want to have a focused approach and response before we put something out there, so that we, you know, we are all informed and to talk about this before, you know, the press or somebody else gets a hold of it, that we've really thought about it. So I would just ask that if, you know, the commission decides to pursue this and to visit the ordinance, that, you know, we have a point person, and that, you know, we thoroughly, you know, come up with a recommendation. I did send you the ordinance from Oak Park. It's, you know, fairly simple and straightforward. I did send you the article about, you know, 9 years ago, somebody raised 2 chickens and they were, you know, they were shut down. So I'm going to just open this up for some thoughts about how you think that the commission should approach this. Yes, Eric.
All right. So just my 2 cents. Hello, Lisa. Good to see you.
Yeah. So
to me, you know, so this ordinance has been in place since 1981. So, you know, it's basically a 40-year yeah. ordinance.
Yeah.
And my 2 cents on it, and I tend to be a little, you know, play devil's advocate a little bit on issues like this, is that one citizen coming forward and saying they want chickens, to me is like, we are trying to find a solution for a problem that probably doesn't even exist. And so is there a way for us to even know if there's demand in River Forest for, you know, a new chicken ordinance? Because it seems silly for us to do work, a whole bunch of work and recommendations, if like there's 3 people in River Forest that want to have chickens. You know, it's a long-standing precedent, and pretty much everyone that has moved here, you know, when chickens were not allowed. So it'd be like a big change.
Right.
Well, that's a really good point, Eric. I guess the other way of gathering information on this is if, when was the Oak Park ordinance adopted, Julie? I don't remember, but.
Oh, gosh. I'd have to look that up. I don't want to say.
I mean, I guess I don't know if there's any way of knowing, you know, how many people in Oak Park are actually doing it, and whether what the village's experience with it has been. I mean, that might be a little bit of a proxy for demand, like, but I don't remember. I think it just says you're allowed to do it. I don't think you have to like register your chickens or anything. So you know, you probably wouldn't necessarily know how many people are doing it in Oak Park either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that would be my other thought is since our neighboring village is doing it, just if there's anybody there who has any experience or insight on whether it's been a good or a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Has anybody ever complained about somebody having chickens or whatnot, right?
Yeah. In Oak Park, I think there's been some complaints. And I agree with you too, Eric, that it's not, you know, just one person. It's like, you know, me saying, you know, that we have to respond to every person. I guess, you know, as these things kind of ebb and flow and come up, I think, you know, we should be prepared with some type of, you know, a history and know what's going on in a statement. And I think some of this is coming, you know, I think Kathy also sends it to Sustainability Commission because she, you know, we're also always for the, you know, the pollinator gardens and the community gardens and the edible gardening. And I think that, you know, we kind of, in a way, kind of promote that kind of urban, you know, food self-sufficiency. So in my view, I think that's where like kind of knowing where we maybe as a commission stand on something like that. I agree that we don't need to, you know, every time someone raises their hand to say, okay, let's change it. Because as we know what happened with the bee ordinance, you know, we put all that work into it, and I don't really know anybody keeping bees anymore in River Forest, where there are, you know, partly due to the winter that happened, but it's also that, you know, it just kind of became cumbersome, and some people just, it left a bad taste in their mouth. And they can keep bees, but, you know, I don't know, maybe there's one or two people doing that right now. I think, Andy, you had kind of looked into that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's very little activity there, like you were saying, with the bad winters, and it's not sort of an easy practice to keep up over the course of the year. You really have to be committed to that.
And I would say the same for chickens. And, the chickens are interesting because I actually am more concerned for the chickens, because if somebody was interested, like, you know, what kind of, you know, veterinarian, you know, where do you get your chickens, and who's going to overlook, like, where do you get chickens? And it's more the health of the chicken that I'd be more worried about. I do know people in Oak Park that keep chickens, and they're very conscientious, and a raccoon actually got into their coop and killed one of the chickens. So I didn't even know raccoons went after them, and neither did she. But, it's not a, wasn't a nuisance to any neighbor or anything, but it's a lot of work to keep the chickens. So it's something to keep up. And is that something that, you know, we think an ordinance should be changed over? So,
before we move on, can I speak as well?
Yeah, no, I'd like to hear. Yeah.
Okay, so I hear what all you guys say. I have over the years talked to several people in River Forest who have wanted to raise chickens. And I know one person in particular who pursued it for many years. I'm sure she's down on the records. And, you know, I think the real answer to how many people do we know want to do this, we can only answer if we make it available, because it would be hard for us to survey every resident. I was not on the commission when beekeeping was considered. So I went back and read an article on it and looked at some of the considerations. And one of the things they did was they looked at other nearby, or you, whoever was on it, looked at other nearby communities to see who allowed it. And so I did the same. Evanston allows it. Riverside allows it. Forest Park does not. And what I noticed was that most villages that allow beekeeping also allow chickens. So those are two things that come hand in hand. With respect to nobody raising bees in River Forest, I believe Dominican University does.
Yeah.
Right. So I would think if we think that this is not something a lot of people wanted to do, and we wanted to put out a measured response, we could allow 12 permits to begin with and see if there's 12 people in River Forest. Then if anybody comes back and says, we don't want a village overrun with chickens, we could say, well, there are only 12 permits. And I believe it might be for beekeeping. No, actually, one of the towns that I looked at, Riverside has up to 15 licenses for beekeeping and for chickens. So it's a way to say we're giving a response, but we're not just going to let like every household. And another thing that it seems like the commission looked in was just, you know, like the urbanness of River Forest, and, you know, compared to Oak Park, we do have larger yards. You know, they refer to 1600 acres. In addition, we have Thatcher Woods. With respect to Julie's comment about the safety of chickens, I know that that applies to cats and, you know, small dogs as well, because we have coyotes walking down the street. I have raccoons the size of dogs in my backyard. So, you know, I think we have to rely on people to, you know, to be responsible. And yeah, so I guess those are my basic points. So I don't think that we should just discard it, even if only one person wants to. And with respect to Eric's comment about this has been in place since 1981, I know that a lot of people are very concerned right now, not about the frequency of going to stores, but also the quality of food coming through the food system now, especially, you know, as we read more about the contamination and meat processing. So maybe this is a good time, even if it has been on the books for a long time, maybe this is a good time to reconsider it.
To build on that, I think that I would move more slowly. I think it is something that we do have to at least, but I think that it's something that you either either we put together a survey and we kind of find out where people are, and then you're going to have to do the pros and cons. Because you're going to have people that want chickens, and then you're going to have just as many people that don't want to live next to a chicken. And so you need to consider both sides of that debate, and it is a debate. A lot of people are great, but not in my backyard. And so I think we have to understand that before we even go to a permitting process. Because as we know in our village, and it's one of the wonderful things about our town, and I think it's also one of the things that makes it, difficult to govern, particularly if you know, is that there are passion, you know, kind of on both sides of kind of any topic, whether that be historical preservation, whether that be the deer, whether it be bees, chickens, the number of pets you can have, etc. So I think we could do a survey, which does open up the whole can of worms in a big way, but then at least you will have given people notice, and then we can, in an orderly fashion, have people provide their perspective. We'll know where kind of everybody's head's at, and then we can make an informed decision.
Yeah, everyone's making very good comments, and this is exactly why we do need to talk about it. It is like the deer, and I don't want this to be like, oh yeah, the commission was talking about keeping chickens. You know, they think it's a really great idea. Before we've looked into, you know, like you said, Lisa, you know, moving ahead more slowly and saying that we should do it this way or that way. And just saying, is there the interest? You know, what is it? What did it look like? And finding out all the municipalities, looking at their ordinances, and talking to them and finding out, you know, what their, you know, obstacles or, you know, their successes have been. So I guess, you know, another thing is this resident, you know, they email Kathy, and I don't know if they're really that aware of the process, but, you know, it would probably take about a year. And, but I would like to, you know, just, we probably need to come up with some type of, yes, we'll look into it and provide some type of answer, but, you know, it will definitely not be a fast moving process, and, you know, in order for it to be thorough. So, I just want to gauge, and Lisa, this is probably really more, you should probably have more input into this, as, you know, you'll be the incoming chair and, you know, have to work through this. So.
And I do think we have, like, again, whatever we did with bees, that was before my time, but I think we can look to, again, the deer's, debate, which is continuing, but I think coming out of that, I think the village will certainly have, and I'm sure Kathy and the trustees will certainly have some points of view with regard to how that should be handled. In fact, I would look to them to provide us with advice and guidance, because there are always going to be kind of debates like this, ability issues, but I brought to Kathy's attention that there was a whole chain on River Forest Parents about an abandoned house with, you know, nuisance problems, and the next door neighbor was just feeling like the village was not being supportive with her plight of living next door to a house that, you know, kind of was not a good neighbor for a lot of reasons. And, you know, as those things come up, you know, again, that's the debate. Why shouldn't a person who owns that house be able to do whatever they want with that house? That's true. But then you have to live next to that house. So, again, I think it's something that certainly we can, I guess it's in our purview, because we're sustainability and, you know, food and, you know, flora and fauna and stuff would fall under us. And, you know, but then again, I think this does go beyond this, and maybe it's something that we do in collaboration with, you know, with with another entity in the village. I'm not sure who.
Yeah. I would be happy to do the background work if someone wants to, you know, give me a list of what needs to be looked into beyond what we've already discussed. Mm-hmm. And I could also reach out to the person who and you know, perhaps the person who responded and asked, do they know other people who they've spoken to and want to do this? I know I've considered it. I would consider having them if it was allowed.
The first step would be maybe you already, Kathy, because I know I was late coming to the meeting. Sorry, I was wrapping up a work thing. Is what advice and guidance does the village have for, or what is the I guess, the desired process with regard to change in the village or addressing kind of an ordinance that does have neighbor to neighbor implications of some kind. And again, I'll go back to what do we learn out of the deer situation and how do we do it better the next go round?
And Bee's also had a neighbor, you know, element to it too. I've lived in two places that went through this chicken process. It is a huge NIMBY like deal. Like everybody loves chickens in theory until they're next to them and then nobody wants them. And actually both places I lived both shot down the ordinances.
What were the two places?
So Eagle County, Colorado, and then Boulder. Boulder allows them, but Boulder only allows them in certain parts of the city that are a little more rural. And Boulder is as liberal of a place as there is on the planet. You know, so that was like actually an interesting approach they took. We don't have that luxury because we don't, all our housing stock's very similar, but you know, they have very diverse stock. So they were able to break the ordinance up based on your acreage and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, you know, Lisa, this isn't for us to like decide what's done. It's for us to probably gather information and make a recommendation to the board. So, I mean, I don't,
as I said, I'm happy to look into that.
I have a conversation with Kathy and just say, what is it you really need to know? And then Susan, I can shoot you an email and you can look it up, but you know, we're not, you know, saying yes, you should do this or no, you shouldn't do it. It's just that, our part of the mission is to provide guidance to per the request of the village trustees when they get these type of questions. So whether it was an ordinance that was created yesterday or 30 years ago, 40 years ago. So I guess, go ahead.
I just have one more, because I would even want to understand, again, I'm really desperate to try to avoid, is like really even before we start gathering information, which then as you gather information, people, you know, kind of hear about it. And then they get into, but you're not asking everybody, there's like the rumor mill in this town, like in any town, because of whether it be River Forest Parents or any of our, you know, kind of the social media. So like, what is the appropriate way to gather this information so it is seen as being unbiased and neutral and looking at both sides and, like truly, truly a fact gathering mission before any conversation or decisions are being made.
Yeah. And no decisions are going to be made, but, I will find that out, you know, how Kathy wants to, and what support she could provide us so that, you know, so that we can gather the information in a way that's helpful and not based on rumors or people talking. Okay.
I just want to add one last point, which this meeting itself is public. So, you know, just the fact that there's only us on the call, you know, certainly anybody could read this transcript and know we were talking about it. So,
and that's fine. It's fine for people.
I don't think the fact that we're considering this is secret. It's
no secret. I mean, somebody had interest. Somebody contacted the village president, and you know, we can just be honest on how we, you know, think we're going to pursue this.
If anything, it's responsible because we're hearing from someone that's interested in something, and you know, it sounds like it makes sense to talk about it and maybe gather some intel based upon, you know, what the trustees want us to do. And yeah, it's public record, but we're not making a like you're saying, Julie, that decision's not being made. And
it's like inside either.
Right. And I think it shows, I think also we need to look at this, that it benefits all of us when situations come up to learn about the issues. I learned a lot about actually beekeeping when that came up, maybe too much, but, I thought that was interesting and to hear both sides. So the same with chickens, you know, so, we can all learn from the information and what's happening. So,
great.
Yeah. it doesn't, it's not a, you know, for or against, it's just a, it's a information gathering that we can do. So.
All right. Well, again, I'd be happy to do that. So just let me know what information we need to push the conversation.
That's great. Thank you very much. So moving on then to green block parties. I did ask John what the official response or stance from the village is, and it's, you know, nothing's going to be happening in the foreseeable future, correct, John? Knowing right. the current conditions. So, you know, I'll get to the budget in a little bit, John, to talk about that, the 5,000. But, you know, we do have money that can pay for our pollinator gardens for this year, but knowing that there aren't going to be block parties, or that we can, you know, depend on having block parties, I was trying to think of different ways that, you know, I plan on calling Open Lands and calling Planet Green and saying, you know, you've, you know, committed this money to us, you know, but I didn't want to just call them and say, we don't know what we're going to do. So this is why I put it on the agenda. I wanted to be able to say, you know, we want to keep up the pollinator gardens. We still have an obligation. Some of that money goes towards the upkeep of them, which David will do. So we do still need their money, and we'll be using it. But that also, you know, moving forward, we still do have a goal of 20 new gardens this year, and we would still like to pursue that. How we do it might be slightly different based on the grant that we had written up. But, and so I was looking maybe for some suggestions or ideas from you on how you think maybe we could still pursue the 20 gardens. And I can kick this off with a few ideas that I had, is that you're not knowing if there'd be block parties or not. You know, even if there are block parties, I think people are going to be very eager to socialize. And I don't know if planting a garden may be the number one priority. But, you know, it's still an activity. There's no reason why we still couldn't offer 20 gardens to people as they sign up for them, and have it be kind of, you know, that one family on that block. And we could maybe get creative in, you know, posting something about it, or filming, or having David do something for us, you know, or, you know, something that still has an educational component, because I think that's what's really a part of the block parties. You know, or is there something that we could expand upon? And I need you to perk up your ears, John. Could we use this money possibly to extend the pollinator gardens along the railroad, you know, the tracks, and have that be something, and then that becomes like, you know, this living garden that can provide future educational, you know, opportunities for Sugar Beet, Little Bits Workshop, the schools, that type of thing.
I know I work at Little Bits, and I know they'd be very, very interested in being part of that.
Yeah, and we were, and I know they're talking about the mural. They're talking about maybe possibly doing more murals along the tracks. So I think there's a lot of ways to tweak this. I think that I just, if I'm going to be calling Gary and Open Lands, I just want to be able to say that, you know, that money is still needed, and that we just need to kind of tweak our grant a little bit.
We had always talked about particularly with the pollinator gardens, if we look at our plan, we were and actually this past year we did expand it. Maybe in retrospect, maybe we're out of alignment a little bit with the original grant, but we had given pollinator gardens to Lincoln School. We had given two to Trinity. I know that the temple in River Forest is interested in a couple. So we were, because of fatigue with regard to the pollinator gardens as part of the Green Block Party, looking to expand to, you know, to institutions, you know, and other venues, you know, kind of to plant, you know, so for example, Little Bits would be considered there, as long as it's on the parkway. We do think it, you know, we did, in planting, the gardens at Lincoln and at Trinity, make sure they were in public view, not on the parkways. I mean, there is concern when you're planting with by schools, having all those kids kind of, you know, on the parkway with cars and stuff like that. So we've already kind of started down that path. I mean, we could continue, but I think to your point, Julie, we should make sure that the grant providers are okay with our doing that. And we can certainly also go back to those folks that own gardens and see if they want to expand them. This past year, we actually did have a number of gardens that were not necessarily new gardens, but were gardens that were well tended by their kind of their the host homes, and they were very interested in expanding the garden. So taking one garden and adding a second one next door to it. So you know, we can also do that as well. The one thing that to your point, we lose potentially when we go to places of worship or go to a host home and ask them to, you know, if they want to double their size, is you do lose that educational component potentially. I think that'll vary based on the host home and the, you know, if they believe they can incorporate it into a block party, if block parties are, you know, somehow open up. I mean, the good news is most of our block parties are more heavy with block parties starting in like August, September, yeah. June and July. It really is not block party, you know, time. So hopefully we'll be in a different place then, and that could help.
Well, I think gardens, you know, people, it's one of the few activities that I think, especially as the weather gets nicer, that's going to keep people sane, right? And there will be a strong interest in doing it. I think the challenge is coming up with the sort of socially distant way to both get them planted as well as to do the educational things. But, you know, people are getting creative in all kinds of ways. You know, I guess while David is planting, somebody could be, filming or talking about it or something. But that's the logistical challenge. But I think that carrying out the intent and the spirit of it, I mean, you know, going out and seeing things blooming and growing is just one of the few things, I think, that's certainly one of the few things making me happy when I go out and see something, you know, blooming. So I think that it's very relevant, but I just don't know if you've talked with David at all about how he might do this in a socially distant way. I mean, if it's an institution or if his crew is still going out, I guess they could plant it while people watch from a distance. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking about the ones that I was involved in. You know, you're really close together. You're planting things together. So I don't know how to kind of replicate that aspect of it. Or do you, you know, leave the plants there with instructions and then tell people to plant it themselves? That the sort of logistical side of it is.
I think we can overcome that. The good news is that even if we people just. Sorry, I didn't really account for the sun coming in. it's like getting hot in here. So one thing is that, you know, we didn't really know how the Victory Gardens with the Green America was really going to kind of take off, that kind of education. You know, we could kind of continue to exploit that as an education component of this, that the village stands for this, and not really focus so much on just people learning right there at the planting, but just continue to use that as an example. So I feel like we can, if we offer the gardens to people or we expand current gardens, that there's still a story to tell that we could use as the education part. So if I'm hearing things correctly, it sounds like we should just
I have a few additional comments. So one is about the educational component. Willard still doesn't have a garden. And when I was doing my survey of schools, you know, relative to the other schools, they're kind of low on natural land and everything. So that might be a natural to reach out to Willard. Also, West Suburban Temple has a preschool. So that might be a way to tie in that there is an educational component to that. With respect to planting the gardens, what we can do is we can find a host family because families are already together. So if we got two parents and a couple of kids that were there and then you know, other people could be across the street and maybe produce a poster or something that, you know, that would amplify what was in there and, you know, the social media and everything else people said. But I think it's doable. And with respect to Little Bits, one thing that they would be able to do if you do choose to go along the way is what happened with the butterfly garden. That actually went the other way, which was we produced a butterfly and then there was a decision to put a butterfly garden in front of it. And then Sue Crether's recognition got placed right in the middle of that. So it kind of went in reverse, but we could do that in the other direction, which would be to plant flowers. And then Little Bits could amplify that on the wall behind it and identify it so people would know what was planted in front. And that would be a little educational there.
To build on that, another idea might be to see if you could, we could make a program in partnership with the Park District. This might be post, like, I don't know how you do it from a socially distancing perspective, but again, I think there's fatigue with regard to the number of people that really want to own gardens, if there's a way to maybe do it with the Park District where you can, people actually raise their hand and want to go to the to this program. They sign up for the program, so they're we already know they're interested, and then we can put those gardens elsewhere in the village, like per your idea in the beginning, but with that educational component, because you would have, folks raising their hand through a program, and it could be a free program that, you know, just sign up and you can come and help us plant a garden. So it's not necessarily to a block party, but it's tied to, you know, kind of the village, like people in the village with that interest coming together.
Yeah. Lisa, do you think there's actually sort of fatigue in that, you know, you think sort of reach the limit of private property owners who want to do it, or is it because it's tied to the green block parties that process of who wants to quote unquote have a green block party, and then when you're having a block party, who's going to sign up for a garden? I don't know. It just suddenly occurred to me listening to you that when people are organizing block parties, they're actually not mainly thinking about something like that. But do you feel like there's just not that much more interest in having?
Well, the first thing I would say is I think we, and again, this is on my to-do, so I haven't done it yet, unfortunately. And I guess the fact that we're not having block parties yet buys us time. We do have to redefine what we mean by a green block party. I think it's got lost. And one of the things that we're all supposed to do is go to the website and update our copy. And Joan, who handles the green block parties from a village perspective, and I and Julie, we had all talked about we need to really kind of look at it, go back to basics, talking about maybe the green block party programming being the pollinator garden. You know, it was like this is the latest in the green in the canned programming we can bring to a block party. I mean, and the previous ones, my understanding, had like a 3-year kind of shelf life. So this is the third year. So we're seeing whether it be, let's talk about composting. Let's talk about, you know, some other things that the village has done over time. In about 3 years, you need to do something new because the same people have block parties over and over. So there's only so many, like, again, it's a program that people love because, okay, from 9 to 9:30 or 9 to 10, we're doing our, you know, building our garden, but they don't necessarily want to do that year over year. So that's the first thing. Second thing is we found that some of the host homes, they'll want a block. They might want it from a green block party perspective, but there's not anybody within the block who really wants to be a host home. So somebody kind of gets, you know, talked into being the host home and then they don't take care of the garden. And that's why this past year we had to do 3 spruce up sub gardens because, you know, the person that took it said, sure, I'll do it, but maybe wasn't a gardener, didn't understand what like it really took to do it. So like you have to also consider and go with folks that really, really want to, you know, kind of tend to this garden over time. So that's a second thing. So I do think that, you know, perhaps decoupling it from the Green Block Party. We talked about piloting kind of a tree tour as part of the Green Block Party. Actually, for the Green Block Party, it could be that as opposed to it being something that the tree tour, a person from the village needs to be there. I think that, Beth, you found, we put it in our Earth Day email. know, how we might be, you know, how we might be able just to give them the kit for them to walk around their own, you know, their own block and label all the trees, you know, with chalk.
And I actually did that with a few of my neighbors on Arbor Day, and it was informative for me as well. There were some trees that I had never particularly paid attention to before.
We'd be interested in like how do we package that up as like, it is like, well, here are the instructions, here's where you go, and here's the website, here's the instructions, this is how you can do it. So the less manpower it requires or people power, the better. You know, we're lucky, at least for the Pollinator for Parkway Gardens, we have David, but this past year, what the other thing that happens is everybody wants to block parties at the same time. Dave has said he will not do three a day anymore because it's just too much.
Yeah.
And the issue of, you know, like just the whole labor thing that kind of comes into it. Hey, Beth, you're on mute.
Okay. It was hard to get people's attention because they were really trying to do the block party. And but anyway, Julie, to answer, I guess, your question, I think it seems like there's certainly a consensus that for that we can represent that we still intend to plant these gardens in some way. And then the fact that there may not be block parties in a conventional way for a while creates this opportunity to sort of decouple the two things and basically sort of publicize to the village and the residents that, you know, there are 20 free pollinator gardens, you know, up for grabs this summer, you know, and who wants to schedule one at a time of their convenience, maybe more with that particular homeowner and anybody that they want to have join, but not requiring sort of the scheduling relating to the block parties and maybe we would get some more demand that way, combined with doing some of them at these institutions.
Yeah, I kind of like the idea of offering it to anyone in the village because it is kind of limiting to the block party, right? And then I like that idea.
And you know, David could pick his scheduling even maybe and say, well, there are these are the dates on which crew is available to come and do it for free and which date you want to sign up for, kind of thing.
You need to track it. And I think that also could buy us some time, just knowing that it's going to take a while to get things kind of jump-started again, and that then gives us this year to decide what would be next summer. Because yeah, these do have about a life of two or three seasons, and so we kind of are giving this a new life because we're offering it to the whole village. And so, you know, that'd be nice. And then what we could do is start to develop a new green block party for the 2021 summer. You know, maybe it's around trees or whatever you decide. But Lisa, to your point, that if the block parties do happen, that we still offer a green block party, it's with a certain type of standard. It means that they compost. It means that they have the signage. It means, you know, X, Y, and Z. And that's just no matter what. You sign up for a green block party, that's what you get. And then this whole presentation part is a separate part of these things. So, but, or, you know, just maybe green block party is a standard for block parties, you know, that your block party will come with, you know, compost or whatever. So that's something.
That's actually an interesting idea.
So,
well, when we get ready for the to plan for the future, I'd be up for trying to work out some kind of a tree tour type thing. You know, maybe Andy, if you want to work on that together, we could work on it for next summer.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a great relationship over at the Morton Arboretum. And people are more than willing to help us with a lot of the educational aspects of that. So more than happy to help.
And Ellie, didn't you want to do something with trees?
Yeah, I think Beth and I were going to do the tree tours together this summer, but no, I guess that's next summer, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but maybe you guys can work on like this whole self-tour concept in the middle. As people are socially distancing and getting out for their, you know, for their walks, you know, this gives them maybe something to do. And for parents to do with their kids, when, you know, the weather is nice, you know, when they walk around, they could, you know, kind of look at the trees and, to your point, you know, write down something about the tree. And that could become a all village thing, like throughout the year, you know, people can add, you know, trivia for, you know, for each tree. I don't know.
I mean, I'd like to see that develop now just to keep, you know, Sustainability Commission, you know, in people's minds and what we do. I think to come up with something like that, that we could, we need some new content on our website, our webpage, excuse me. And I think that'd be kind of nice to have just maybe a simple, you know, Beth, like what you did and just
talk. Yeah, it was very simple. All right, sure. I can, Ellie and Andy, I can reach out to you separately after the meeting. We can see what we can come up with.
Because it'll be, you know, like, again, like, regular people walking down the street. So how can they, you know, kind of make their walk more interesting? And I think that, I actually think that it could do, you know, it would be really fun.
Well, I know that the people that I showed that parkway map to were, you know, amazed and thought it was really fun. So it's good publicity for what the village and John and your crew have done so much work to put together.
Yeah. Is there a way to print out, is there a way to print out for a block what the trees are, just to put together a little kit so people can do the chalk that you were talking about?
I think that's what we're talking about having them do, is like
to print it out
as that in some way, shape, or form, so it can be taken on walks.
Yeah, or even just the identification, because somebody had done that in my neighborhood and I thought it was pretty cool. But the other thing I was wondering is there any way to preserve that, because as soon as it rains, all the, you know, so if you do it one day and it rains the next day, it's gone.
But that's also part of the fun, I think. I mean, I don't know. It's just getting out and doing it. I don't know. But
John, is there a printable version of that map?
That's a good question. I think there's a part of the map on the side that looks kind of like a spreadsheet that I think can be printed out. I would just have to look into it more because I've never done that, but I think it's possible. So I would just have to play around with that map and see how to do it, you know, the right way. I think it depends on what area you're zoomed in on, and then it would show everything, all the trees in that area, and it would be on that little spreadsheet. So I can try and figure it out.
Okay, well, you should work on that offline then, Beth. So, and John, you did look at the budget, and I just quickly want to say that $5,000 from Open Lands was supposed to be allocated for 2021. I mean, this summer's, you know.
Yeah.
Budget.
Okay. I'm just gonna pull up the budget right here.
Yeah, I mean, I can. I don't know if you're all aware of that, but like tomorrow starts the village's 2021 fiscal year. So mm-hmm. We start from zero again, the commission does, okay? Yep. And that's kind of why I'm also just talking about the money, because it was $9,000 from Planet Green, $5,000 from Open Lands, but Open Lands paid in January, but it's for this summer, okay? So.
One more thing with regard to the tree tour thing, and this might be something, I don't know do we have any idea if Morton Arboretum is working with a Google or some other mapping company to create a tree app? Imagine Google Maps, you open it up, and as opposed to, you know, being streets, it's trees. Like, and if we have the data, if they could import it. I mean, I know folks at Google, so I can ask them, but I'm just curious if some of our, you know, like the Airbnet,
yeah, and
Arboretum are working on some sort of tree tour type thing for.
Do you mean an app that helps you identify trees, or?
No, an app that would actually allow you to put in the data to, as opposed, you know, it's just imagine Google Maps, but it's for, you know, you're walking down the street, and as opposed to seeing houses, you might, you know, somehow be able to identify the trees as they go by. Yeah. Because we have to give it the data. So we'd have to take basically the data that's in our, you know, that we already have, and it would just basically be visualized differently through this app.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wacky thing, but I can't imagine that. I would bet dollars to donuts that somebody is, you know, has something there. And your point, I'm sure there's already tree identification software on an app, but the sister one would be, you can either play the game, let's identify the tree, and then identify the tree and then see if you're right. Or the other thing is just literally walk down the street and be able to look at your, the app and say, I'm standing in front of 1043 Keystone. There are three trees here. You know,
what is that tree?
That's definitely something to explore. See who's doing that. I'm sure somebody's working on something like that, or even like the Young Filmmakers Contest. You know, some, maybe Sue Gee knows somebody who was working on the an app. There was a one that did something with recycling, and he had an app that was sent out. So
there's an app called iNaturalist, which does that. It will identify, I mean, basically anything, a tree, a plant, a flower, and it's pretty good. Like it can identify in winter, even without, you know, without leaves and everything. So that exists. It's not giving you a map, but if you're just in front of a particular tree, it'll tell you.
Okay, well, good. This is good, I'm feeling. So I'll just say I just kind of wanted to touch base with those so that we don't let those kind of fall off the radar, because those are things we can still work from at home and still get, as the weather gets nicer, still engage people. And are there any other, you know, thoughts he wants to share about, you know, what's going on or work we need?
I have one thing I want to share, or just say it out loud, forget, is that I know that, you know, Shannon and I were supposed to work on metrics. And of course, like now that all of our, you know, programs are temporarily halted, we don't have that data gathering, but I am, I'm trying to think about how to not completely drop the ball on that. I don't know if anybody has heard from Shannon. I reached out to her. I assume she is just completely overwhelmed. And, you know, I have offered to her that if she could find time to just teach me about what she was using to do calculations and all of that, that perhaps I could pick up on her work. But the other half of this was supposed to be, you know, working, reaching out to each of you individually and talking about how we wanted to measure impact of our programs so that we could be gathering data as we went along. So I kind of wanted to take everybody's temperature on, you know, I know it's kind of like everything has just gone out of our heads. I feel like, you know, everything is on pause, but the longer this goes on, you know, do people feel like it's still productive? You know, I guess I could reach out to you one-on-one and we could look at those sheets and say, okay, here are the impact measures that, you know, Lisa and you had put together. And once we do get going again with running programs, are these still good measures? Can we come up with other measures? Or is this just kind of a exercise in futility right now because we don't have anything to measure? Just like people's thoughts.
I think if we could still, I mean, now I think about it, like again, like it, everybody's situation is very different. I get that. I mean, mine, unfortunately, work is busier than ever. So I spend more time at work now than I did when I was going to work downtown. But I think that if we could move forward with the measurement thing, it's a perfect thing to do. You know, it is something to do if we can get out of, you know, if Sharon can find some time, to kind of download what's in her head to you.
Right. Well, yeah, there were sort of really two pieces to it. One was completing the greenhouse gas inventory, and that was more of a technical calculation. The other half was these conversations with, you know, each of the commissioners on the program areas that they own. So maybe, you know, I mean, I don't have time to talk to everybody at once either. So I guess, you know, if anybody feels like they're more up for talking about their particular program and just kind of having a conversation around how to measure and tell story of impact, if anybody wants to say they're more interested, I could start with one of you. I mean, everybody owns different ones of those sheets, right? And without Shannon to partner with, I think we were probably going to split it up, but or if we collectively think that there's one of the programs is more likely to, get going again sooner. I suppose we've just been talking about the pollinator gardens thing, so maybe that's, I forget who's the owner of that, the pollinator garden. You are, Sue? Then?
No, I think Lisa, maybe I might be on it too.
I don't have the document in front of me right now.
I'll check.
I think Beth, we're giving you, you take the information that you think can be more most relevant and tell a story. It is huge. And I think that if you just focus on one thing and tell the story about that in what we've already decided we're trying to do, because it's overwhelming. It's hard to get people to work on this. It's, I mean, I feel like I'm just coming up for air after just kind of 6 weeks of not really thinking much about the commission other than kind of the Earth Day stuff. And so we all need to kind of re-engage. And I think it's probably asking a lot of people to kind of go right into the metrics. I think we need to kind of, think about our next steps for Green Block Party and the stuff we've been talking about. But yeah, I think everybody needs to look at the matrix thing again and start, inputting where they can. But Beth, I think we're also looking to you to say, the trains, I'll just use that as an example. That's going to be the last thing I visit. Right now, I really want to focus on the story about the gardens, and Shannon's told me how I can calculate that, and we're going to make that part of the whole education thing when we talk about the Victory Pollinator Gardens. And, do you understand what I'm saying? It's just kind of like, it's okay for you to say, I'm focusing on this, or for you to tell us how you want to do it. And where you think, and make recommendations where you think the biggest impact will be.
Okay.
Knowing that we're trying to tell a story and knowing that we're trying to have people make a connection. It's just like right now you hear the stories on, NPR. Oh, emissions are down 8% due to, less flying, less this. And so I think people are looking for kind of like that soundbite. You're decreasing your carbon footprint by blah, by planting your pollinator garden, by composting, by doing this. And we're just trying to get people to connect the individual acts that they're doing into the overall act of decreasing our carbon emissions. And I think right now, if I can just be on my soapbox for a minute, we're using our current pandemic crisis to excuse ourselves from not thinking about the sustainability, but it is still there. And so I think we just have to keep it in, people's minds that it is still important, like Susan said, to, not accept a plastic bag and not just say, I don't know what to do, So that's my 2 seconds of preaching there, but
Okay, well, let me try again to see if I can get in touch with Shannon and
excuse me.
I think I will think about something relating to the pollinator garden, since that seems like the one thing we're definitely going to go ahead with in some form or another.
And I can, Beth, we can jump on a call one night for an hour.
Okay.
I mean, God knows that's, between pollinator gardens and healthy lawn, healthy family. I know a lot about both of those right now, so I'd be happy to.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some, I want to thank John and the Public Works Office for, offering to deliver compost to everybody. I thought that was great. Instead of just saying, hey, no, we're not going to do it, if you're a compost subscriber, I thought that was a great way to do it. There's still ways that we can, connect people with what's going on, so.
We just need more afternoons like this. We need less rain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, so that
the community garden is moving forward. I could just report that since I'm a gardener there. So I wasn't sure, and I wasn't sure if they would provide water. So I was really happy about that. Yeah. And So.
And I know Andy has brought up a grant that is, do you want to just mention that quickly, Andy?
Well, John, actually, you submitted that application today, didn't you?
Right, yeah.
Great. What
is the grant?
It's an application to be a part of a learning collaborative in order to apply for the ITEP grant. The ITEP grant is the Illinois Transportation Enhancement Program, and that would be a grant for the bicycle plan. So we have the bicycle plan completely engineered, phase one and phase two, and there's an implementation plan for that. But we'd like to get grant money for it, if at all possible, before we move forward with it, especially during this time to get the grant money. So this, hopefully we get this grant, which basically teaches us how to apply for the bigger grant. Yeah. So that's what we're hoping to get right now.
Yeah, so thank you for doing that as well. So continue to move. So I think there sounds like there's a lot of conversations that need to kind of happen offline here. And I know Ellie and Beth, you'll talk about maybe coming up with some type of kit, and Andy is working on continues to monitor the bike information. And Susan, you're doing the gardens, and Eric, you continue to look at the energy. And that aggregation is still out there. So maybe that's something to start revisiting again.
Aren't there also more edible gardens? We didn't talk about that.
There are still edible gardens that are out there.
Right, is there any plan to move forward on that? It's just one thing we hadn't touched on.
Yeah.
We just need to find somebody that wants that last garden.
Okay.
I will tell you though, for example, that it's gonna be, and you can see it, it's actually right by the, it's on Division right by the new, like their new, that's not new anymore, but their basketball, kind of their gym. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to get planted this year because there's no kids in school to plant it. And that the goal there was their green team was going to plant it. And then over the summer when they had their Blazer camps, that garden was going to be maintained. So I think it's going to unfortunately be fallow, would not be planted this year, and then we'll have to pick it up next year.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is one more that we have to give out. And then basically if the village wants to continue to participate in the program, I mean, they're $1,000. We got a price tag of $1,000 per new garden. So we would have to do the Beach Ridge project in order to, install it. We got six with a grant now on an ongoing basis. The Deep Ridge project is happy to implement, to put them in for us. We just need to pay for them on a per garden basis.
Okay.
If we so choose, but we still have one that, is more or less, I guess, free, for lack of a better.
Included, and that includes two years of planting.
That's something I had to find out. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
I thought it was okay. I didn't know if it was.
I thought it was two.
Okay. Yeah.
Have to look into that.
Actually, your name is on that now. So what we can
we can talk about it. All right. Let's talk.
So if the, I. My Zoom meeting's exhausting, so I'm kind of ready to.
I have one last request for John before we hang up. John, I was looking at the Park District planted some really spectacular wildflower gardens all over the village. And I think the way they did it is there's sort of a carpet that gets rolled out and they look beautiful the first year. But often what happens with those is they're not maintained. And I was walking by the one actually that's near the Public Works building, and it's just full of dandelions and different things. And I just wondered if there was a delicate way you could speak to the Park District and see, if they have any plans of weeding those and maintaining them, because otherwise, I'm sure it was costly to do and they were really, really pretty. And I'm just wondering if they'll just deteriorate and if they might get lost, just in everything that's going on.
Yeah. Are you talking about the ones by the tennis courts?
That's one of the two tennis courts. Yeah. And then there's Also, one on the hill, one leading up to the sledding hill, and then there's one on the south side, pretty close to the depot, but on the south side of the tracks.
We have a list we can get you if you want it.
I mean, Park District knows where they are. It's just a question, are they planning on maintaining them? Because, you know, they don't last forever, especially if you're not, you know, if you're not weeding and taking care of them. So I just wondered if it came through you. I don't know how delicate these things are, but if it came through you.
We can bring it up to them. A lot of times with those, they start off looking really bad. You may know this. And then later on, they're like, oh, all of a sudden they look really good. So
they look great last year. They were just gorgeous. But I just noticed they're all full of dandelions and other weeds.
Yeah. Because I remember we did some of our own and people were complaining. And then a few weeks later, they looked really good.
Yeah. So. No, by the end of the summer, they were spectacular. They were really pretty.
But yeah, we can bring it up with them, see what they're doing.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
So if it's okay with all of you, I think I'd like to just keep us on schedule for the next meeting, just so it gives us, which is May 12th. We can keep it to an hour. I know this one went a little longer, but maybe we do it a little earlier again so John doesn't have to stay late.
You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, I can do this from my home too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the 7 o'clock time would be.
Isn't time just all the same now?
Yeah. Oh, blur. Yeah.
No clear days of the week. But if John doesn't mind doing it at 7, it's easier for me to know for sure that I can, you know, clear my calendar at that evening time. I'd have to check my work calendar for May 12th.
Yeah. Would it be okay to get back on schedule then? That is the.
That'd be fine. Like I said, I can just do it from home. I can do this anywhere. That's what Zoom is, right?
I think it allows us to, you know, finish up some things or wrap them up. I guess it's more for me than for all of you, just so.
I think it's a good idea.
It's a good idea.
So the May 12th at 7. Would be the next meeting. So, okay. Well, it was nice to see everyone.
Good to see everyone's face.
Yeah. Stay safe, everyone.
Hey, take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In a couple weeks.